Today, Harry Dent and the Great Reset. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. And today, a real treat. This is the complete recording of the conversation between Harry Dent and John Adams that I made a couple of weeks ago when Harry was in Australia. Harry, of course, is the famous author, economist, and business strategist who has some very strong views about the future of the global economy. And John spent some time with him exploring some of these dimensions. In fact, this is the third in a series of posts relating to Harry Dent, and I'll put the links in the comments below. The first one that we published a couple of weeks ago related specifically to my conversation with Harry about central banks. And a couple of days ago, we released a second show where John and I set Harry's discussions into a broader context. So now sit back and enjoy the full Harry Dent effect.
Hello, Harry. How are you going?
Good, John.
So you've arrived here in Australia today.
And the jet lag has not hit me yet. That'll be tomorrow morning.
Excellent. All right. Well, I mean, so obviously you'll have a good sleep tomorrow. But obviously welcome to this sort of specific conversation. So obviously you were here in February here in Australia, and you did a bit of a national tour, and you gave some media interviews, and you talked about your thesis around how the world, but as well as Australia, will go through some sort of depression, something more significant than 10 years ago could rival the Great Depression, and you gave some particular particular forecasts about property in particular. So this conversation, I want to unpack that thesis and sort of explore a few elements. So to the average viewer watching the show, so when you talk about a global depression and a depression in Australia, to the average viewer, to the average Aussie, what does that look like?
Well, there's two things going on globally. The developed countries, everybody except Australia and a few other small countries, have a demographic problem. There's aging. People aren't having as many children. And more people are moving into their 50s and 60s and 70s where they don't make as much money, they don't spend as much money, and they start drawing on the systems, the government systems,
All
the entitlements and stuff. So this is something entirely predictable. I said in 1989, in my first book, that in 2007 we'd see a peak in most stock markets in the world, and then we'd start to see a downturn globally led by developed countries. Now, not emerging countries, not China, not India, and all that. So that's number one. Number two, we've had an unprecedented debt bubble around the world.
Yep.
Into 2007, all the developed countries borrowed. Governments borrowed, consumers borrowed to buy real estate, corporations, financial institutions put out derivatives and borrowed money to leverage the system. This only happens about once in a lifetime. The last major debt bubble we had in the world peaked in 1929. We know what followed that.
Yeah.
We had financial bubbles going into it, and we had a deleveraging of debt and financial bubbles in the greatest depression in history. So debt bubbles cause economies to grow faster than they should and get out of balance. Debt bubbles directly feed financial asset bubbles and things like stocks and real estate and even commodities and stuff. And so both of these create excess growth, excess wealth, and then that has to be deleveraged down, and deleveraging is like a heroin addict coming off of heroin. It's nasty.
Yeah.
You have to get the stuff out of your system. You have to write down debts. Money disappears.
Yes.
And when the stock market, for example, in 29 to 32, dropped 89% in the United States. These are blue chip stocks, not small caps. 89% and did not get back there for 24 years to those levels. Money disappeared. That's wealth people had in their brokerage account one day. Oh, I got a $300,000 account. Oh, now it's $40,000. Boom. $260,000 disappeared. Didn't come back for a long time. That causes deflation.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something people have seen in the world for a long time. The last time we saw global deflation was in the 1930s. So I'm saying the world is coming at a crisis like this. It started in 2008, right on target. But this time, governments did something they've never done before, and that's just they printed boatloads of money. And now it's up to $16 trillion. All governments, all central banks have increased their balance sheets by $16 trillion. They bought their own bonds and securities, dropped interest rates down, you know, 1, 2, 3 percentage points, made everything cheaper. Short-term rates have been at zero, even negative. And so this has caused, once the bubble started bursting in 2008 looked just like 1930. You had major financial institutions. You had General Motors, AIG, non-financial institutions, basically blowing up. So government said, well, we're not going to let it happen. So they just, trillions and trillion dollars. Okay, the bathtub is leaking. We're just going to fill it up.
Yeah.
What happens in that, yes, it did save the banking system. It did save the economy. But you're not allowing all this debt to be restructured, not allowing these bubbles to deleverage. Mm. You're not allowing housing to become affordable again. What is the next generation in Australia or the United States or China or anywhere? How are they ever going to afford a house?
Yeah.
When it's bubbled up.
Yeah.
People think real estate bubbles are good. It's only good for the people who own the stuff. It's bad for the young people. Old people don't buy real estate. They sit on it. Young people buy real estate. And if it's too expensive, it cuts their standard of living.
Sure. So because of your sort of reading about the Great Depression, so the person watching this, when this event does arrive, what will it look like to the average man on the street, do you think?
Well, again, I call it a great reset. And it only happens once in a lifetime, so people don't understand it. When all these prices, again, stocks bubbled up into 2007, commodities bubbled up into 2008, first time since 1980, and before that, 1920. And real estate bubbled. Everything bubbles up. Everything gets reset. Real estate will go down 30 to 50% in a bubble deleveraging. Stocks will go down 70 to 90. Commodities will go down 70 to 90. How much has iron ore gone down? 80% already. Oil, 80% already. So people always tell me, Harry, you say stocks or things go down 70, 80%. That's crazy. That can't happen. I said, it's already happened in commodities. It already happened in Japan. Japan's market already down, stock at worst, 80%. Their real estate fell 60% and has never bounced, never. Even when the next young generation comes along. You know why? More people, old people are dying than young people coming along buying houses, and old people are sellers, guaranteed sellers. Mm, mm, that's never happened before, where you had more old people selling than young people buying. That's unique to this era, because people are having fewer and fewer kids, and that's back to the demographic problem globally in developed countries, and it's starting to happen. China actually had a workforce peak in 2011. Nobody noticed this. It's declining, and migrant workers that have been feeding all their growth all of a sudden have stopped moving into cities, and they keep building all this stuff. Now, we're gonna need it in the future. Oh, really? Even the migrant rural people are no longer moving in these overpriced, overcrowded, overexpensive, overpolluted cities.
Sure. So where do you think the source of the crisis will be? So for example, some people in Australia have said the crisis may originate within the Australian economy because of house prices, because of debt. Some people, including the Reserve Bank, the Deputy Reserve Bank Governor yesterday on the public record, said that the debt problem in Australia is not going to collapse our economy systemically, but the risk is something coming from overseas. So in the Australian context, do you see the Australian debt bubble collapsing of its own weight, or that it will be an international event that will sweep us right
both,
through?
Both. In this case, one thing I like about real estate and bubbles, stocks can just go up and up and up, because there's no, they can be crazy and at some point they're gonna pop, but there's those limits. People have to buy real estate.
Yes.
Businesses have to buy or rent office buildings. Mm. So if the price gets too extreme, it actually, the bubble kills itself. That's starting to happen. Is real estate going down in Australia because you're in a recession? No, not in a recession. The GFC started in the US. The biggest trigger was the subprime crisis in the US. Real estate started falling in 2006, a year and a half before stocks started falling and before the economy started to weaken. Why? They got too expensive. Banks were lending money, you know, no money down, and all these teaser loans and all this crazy stuff. And people started defaulting. So the real estate crisis led the bigger crisis, and the real estate, the subprime crisis in the United States, and first of all, you gotta remember, I don't even call it United States. It was four states: California, Arizona, Nevada, and Florida. Four states dominated the subprime default loans and stuff, yep. and triggered a worldwide crisis. Spain blew their real estate. Ireland blew. Other countries on, but. And then everything went down. Okay, you can't have a worldwide crisis over four states having a default problem. It's just a trigger. Once something goes wrong and you're in bubbles around the world and there's too much debt around the world, all this debt comes into question. And people start worrying about junk bonds, and they start worrying about this country, and they start worrying about Italy or Greece, you know. So that's what happens. You get this negative effect. So I see two triggers in the world. I think this time it is emerging country debt. Mm-hmm. It was the developed countries that went crazy borrowing money and ranking up debt into 2007 in the greatest boom in history from 1983 to 2007, which we predicted in our first book back in 1989.
Yep.
When that went down, you know, the ECB and Japan and the Federal Reserve and all these central banks in developed countries had to flood their economies with cheap money, and then started buying their own bonds and pushing out. Well, that meant emerging countries saying, well, wow, now we can do it, and we can borrow cheaply. So Turkey's in trouble.
Yeah.
Well, Venezuela, we don't have that. That's hyperinflation. That's a whole other thing. But Turkey is just a mini China. Turkey borrowed a bunch of money to expand. And now they're starting to default and have problems. They were able to borrow cheaply in American dollars because of our rescuing our economy. It was a byproduct. So now it's the emerging countries that have way too much. They borrowed almost all the money globally after 2007-08. So now they're having problems. The U.S. dollar is going up. Oh, that makes it hard to pay back these U.S. dollar loans. The Federal Reserve is pushing up interest rates. Short-term and long-term are going up following them. Oh, now they got it's harder to service the loans.
Yep.
And the only difference between Turkey and China, two great examples, China borrowed more than everybody. China generated their own debt internally. Turkey borrowed foreign.
That's right.
And when you're borrowing from foreigners, you're subject to them, and they can just close you down.
Sure.
But China did the same thing. They went on a borrowing spree bigger than ever. So I think the emerging countries kind of risky debt is going to default first, and then that causes people to question debt, and the next thing will be, well, what about Italy? What about Greece? Everybody thinks Greece is over. Greece is not over. They haven't done anything to rectify the Greece situation. They just pushed the can down the road. Yeah. Italy is technically bankrupt, has more debt than all the rest, more bad loans than all the rest of Europe put together. Italy is going down, period. Yeah. It's just something's got to trigger. And what'll trigger it is people will start to say, uh-oh, these countries are defaulting, Turkey and Venezuela and Iran and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Oh, and China's starting to blow up in parts. And all of a sudden they say, oh, well, the rates will go up on the Italian bonds, and then they're dead.
Yep.
And when they're not 3% and they're 8% or 10%, they're dead.
Sure. So the basic thesis is the emerging market economies, they're going to get in trouble. And
I think globally that's the trigger. Australia is acting just like the U.S. did last time. Real estate is peaking first and coming down first. Banks are tightening credit. And so real estate is a much, much, much bigger deal for Australia and the United States, because 28% of our net worth is in real estate in the United States. Most of it's in financial assets like stocks and stuff. 67% of net worth in Australia. And Australia, by the way, has the highest median net worth in the world. It's slightly ahead of the United States, even though we have higher incomes. You guys have higher net worth because of what? Real estate.
And it's all above.
So you guys are way more exposed. Real estate starts to go down. The banks here are way exposed to it. People are exposed to it. And so that is going to cause, that's going to be an internal crisis that starts to trigger here. It's not going to be your stock market crashing that's going to trigger a crisis here.
Right. Yeah.
And real estate, the other thing we've noticed in history, there's depressions all throughout history. The ones where real estate is at the center are always worse, because people don't tend to borrow money except for traders, but most people don't borrow money to buy stock. They borrow money, businesses and consumers, to buy real estate. So it's leveraged.
Yes.
You know, 80% mortgage, 20%. Some case, I mean, people were buying houses in the United States with no money down, 3% down, and it's getting a little bit that way. here. China does not have that problem. China has extremely overvalued real estate, the worst in the world, the greatest vacancy, 22% empty. 22% empty, and prices are going up. That won't happen in any other country in the world because China's a rigged market. China's problem is not going to be people defaulting because they buy cash.
Yep.
And Chinese, when they come over to Australia and buy, they buy cash because they're laundering money out of their country, sure. Saying, oh, my kid's going to a university in Sydney, and I think I got to buy her a $20 million condo. Or, you know, sure. Do they want to borrow money? No, they're getting money out of China because they can only transfer legally $50,000.
Sure. So because of that, so is your thesis that we will see banks around the world fall over?
Yes. In the case of Australia, your government debt's very low, one of the lowest in the world. That's not the big problem.
Yeah.
The problem is you have very high consumer debt. Canada and Australia and a few other countries like Norway have the highest consumer debt in the world because of high real estate prices. So that's where the problem is here. And the banks are overexposed to real estate because of that. They lent most of their money against real estate. That's not true of the banks in the United States.
Sure. So, but because of that, so when I've looked at previous depressions, whether it was the 1890s or in the 1920s, 1930s, you see bank failures. Do you see that some of these globally systemically important banks, but also some of our big banks in Australia, could we see the banks basically become?
And you know what? Every stress test says, oh, they're okay.
Yep.
Yeah, they're okay under some stress test, assuming just X happens. What you get is you get this negative feedback loop. Again, in a boom, when things go up, well, real estate goes up, people feel richer and have higher equity. Oh, stocks go up. Oh, God, you got higher equity here. And you know, wages go up, and it all feeds into it. The same thing happens when it goes down. Something starts falling, like subprime loans in the United States, or emerging. It's basically corporate debt that's mostly bad, and some government debt in these emerging countries. These start to fail. Well, then people start looking at all debt and saying, well, what about this? What about these high-yield loans, you know, these junk bonds. Right now, junk bonds are priced hardly above normal good corporate bonds because nobody thinks there's a chance of recession because nobody thinks the central banks will let us have a recession. Well, that starts to change. And so all this stuff starts happening and people start spending less and people start worrying. And so everything goes down. So these stress tests are not real. Ben Bernanke said he knew about the subprime loans. He says, look, it's only this percent of loans. It's only blah, blah, blah. It's containable. No, it wasn't containable because it started a domino effect.
Sure, sure. Okay. So basically, to summarize your position, so you do expect systemic bank failures across the world.
Across the world.
Yeah.
But I think this time it's going to start with emerging countries. Yeah. And then it hits the weakest countries, developed countries like Italy and Greece and Portugal and stuff.
Yeah.
And then it starts to hit, and then everybody gets in question. And a lot of junk bonds, U.S. has a wall of junk bond refinancings coming into 2023,
sure.
A wall coming up. Right now, doesn't look like a problem. Wait until the economy's weaker. Wait until interest rates are rising, especially on high-yield bonds. They're going to have a terrible time refinancing this thing, and they're going to have to refinance them at higher rates.
Sure. So when we start to see systemic risk coming to the fore in the global economy, do you think that the governments and the politicians, they're going to let the system go, or they're going to attempt to intervene to rescue the situation?
Oh, of course they're going to attempt. Here's the problem. They've already done this. Okay.
What?
They
okay.
did this in 2008. They came in, they bailed out companies. And they flooded the economy with liquidity and money and have done it ever since. And you know, when U.S. slacks off, Europe jumps up. And China just went off the reservation in 2013, tripled their quantitative easing and still doing it. And they're still in a very low growth economy. So they've already done this. If the economy starts, and then Trump comes in the U.S. economy with the highest corporate profits as a percentage of GDP any time in history and says, oh, companies need a tax cut. Are you kidding? Income inequality, the highest since 1929. Everyday people, Main Street going nowhere, Wall Street, high net worth people growing like crazy. And he gives tax cuts that go where? To the top 1%, 10% max. They own all the stocks. They own all the companies.
Sure.
So all of this stimulus, they've already done this. If the economy starts to fail, and I think fail badly, people will say, the government's going to say, oh, well, we just didn't do enough. Oh, okay, so $16 trillion didn't work. So you're going to need $50 trillion this time, quantitative easing? $100 trillion? So, my estimate, $100 trillion in the world, $100 trillion out of about $300 trillion in debt is at risk of defaulting. They're going to print $100 trillion to offset that. I don't think people are going to go for it.
Well, so your thesis is what the politicians... will the politicians attempt to print $100 trillion, or they won't?
They will propose to, and they'll start be people going, well, wait a minute, you did this before and it didn't work. Now we're in a worse situation than before. Why would this work this time? Now here's my thing. People do have common sense. Okay, when you see the government's solution, not only bailing out companies, they should have let AIG fail. Their life insurance policies wouldn't have gone bad. They were good. They're backed by bonds. Some other company would have taken over their policies, blah, blah, bought them for whatever cents on the dollar. They should have let AIG go under, you know? They didn't. So people see that. And then printing all this money, like, look, it's like something for nothing. People, out of thin air. You're just creating money out of thin air and throwing in the economy. And there's a guy now proposing to give everybody in the United States, every adult, $1,000 a month.
Universal basic income.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when this fails, I think people are going to say, you know, I mean, because people have finally bought it. It has worked long enough. Consumer confidence is back. Consumer confidence was very slow to come back because you got to remember, the everyday person is not participating in this recovery and hasn't seen their wages gone up substantially since 2000, you know,
sure.
Almost 20 years. So they're finally, though, people start saying, well, and even our subscribers to our newsletter are kind of like getting more bullish. That's a bad sign,
sure.
In my point of view.
Sure. So but the thing is that, okay, so your thesis is that the population in Western democracies will revolt against...
I think people are going to question it. That's right. I think they, by doing this to such extremes, and then the economy fails anyway. And second of all, this is extremely naive. This economy, I mean, demographic trends are only worse than they were before. I mean, that's what I do. I measure demographic trends.
Right.
They get worse in most countries into the early 2020s. Debt is only higher. It's $67 trillion higher than it was at the top of the last boom. All the fundamental trends are worse. And so that's why by pumping things up, they've just allowed more debt, bigger financial bubble. Stocks are way more bubbly than they were before. Housing in the United States is marginally more bubbly.
Sure.
It's way more bubbly here in Australia.
Sure.
And China, off the charts.
Sure. Okay, but the thing is...
So it means when it does crash, it crashes harder. It's like a heroin addict, okay? If you keep saying, okay, well, every time I come down, okay, I feel terrible. So how do you end the pain? You take more heroin. It takes more and more heroin to keep it going, and then when you finally do collapse or have a crisis, then you only have a worse detox. It doesn't get better, it gets worse with this stimulation.
Sure, but you know, the way when I listen to how you think, I guess for me is, and I've spoken to certain Australian politicians about this, in the heat of the crisis, so if you're the Prime Minister or you're the US President and the banks are coming to you and saying, we're about to go broke this afternoon, well, my initial hypothesis is that in the heat of the crisis, they will attempt to print. So I'm expecting...
And they will to some degree. Now, here's the second point. What happened last time? The GFC, okay? Especially the United States. We were at the center. We were the trigger. By time the Federal Reserve and the central banks reacted, it was early 2009, we'd already had a 56% stock crash, real estate had already crashed 34%, foreclosures everywhere. We already had most of the crisis. Now, they stopped it from getting worse. It would have turned into the Great Depression.
Right.
But okay. The point is, even when they do react, I mean, all central banks, what has the U.S. done? Now they've gone towards tightening.
Yes.
Well, Europe's just starting to tighten. Japan's talking about it. They're all good. Central banks, you know, don't just they try to act. It's not going to be easy for them to, if they suddenly turn around and say, oh my God, we got to suddenly go and print a bunch of money again and buy a bunch of bonds again. First of all, the markets are going to say, well, now we know we're in trouble. If the central banks are panicking, we know we're in trouble. That would cause a stock crash right there. So even if they do react, and even stronger, we're going to have a big crisis before they can react. And I'm telling you, this happens fast. I'll give you an example. 7 out of 7 stock bubbles I've studied in the last century, all the big ones, 29, the Nikkei crash, the tech bubble, all of that. The first crash in the stock market is 42% on average in 2.6 months. Bam! Nobody, no central bank, they'll start to maybe react then. Stock's already down 40%. People already say, oh my God, we're in another crash. Oh my God, GFC's coming back, you know. And then people, what do people do? Well, I'm not going to buy a house. I'm not going to do this. I'm going to cut back on my spending. I'm going to sell some stocks. And, you know, people react. You get this negative thing coming. It's not easy to stop an avalanche.
Sure. So, all right. Okay. So, B, what you're saying is we're gonna have a debt bubble. We've got a debt bubble. Emerging markets are gonna be in trouble. That's gonna start spread. Systemic crisis. Deflation will kick in once the defaults and the insolvencies start, and then there will be an attempt to print.
There'll certainly be an attempt. There's no question they'll try to print. No question they'll try to bail out some banks and stuff. But it may just be happening so fast they can't keep up with it, and or at some point, people, more and more people in society and in politicians and stuff will start to say, wait a minute. There's going to be factions that say, wait a minute, we've seen this movie before. We did this, and here we are in a crash that's even worse than 2008, and real estate's going down more this time, and it will. And Australia is already down more than the entire 2008 crisis here. We haven't even had the crisis yet.
Okay. So you think that there will be an attempt to print, but by the time they start to intervene, there'll be a political limitation as to how much they can actually print.
Yeah, I think they'll be too late. There'll already be a lot of damage. Yeah. And in fact, it may be so strong this time that they can't stop it. Again, they've created a bigger monster. That's my view.
Yep.
All they've done is create a bigger monster. We've added another $60 trillion in debt just in the emerging world. And they're the worst, they're the least credit worthy. There's no way to stop Turkey from blowing up. There's no way. Venezuela's already got hyperinflation. Why? Hyperinflation comes when it's foreign debt driving your country. So you print money to pay off the debt, but the money doesn't go into your economy to kind of sustain it. It goes out, and the more it goes out, the more your currency falls because money's going out, and you get this hyperinflation cycle. That's what happens. Venezuela's already dead.
Yeah.
And they got 1,000,000% inflation. You can't stop that. Turkey's already dead, and when China finally blows, when 50 million empty homes start coming on the market. You know, Chinese don't sell real estate. They don't sell. They don't rent it. They don't sell it. They think it's going to go up forever. They buy 2-3 houses, not one, because everybody's speculating in China. When they start saying, uh-oh, real estate is going down, they're going to have to start selling some of those empty condos and apartments. When they start selling, how do you stop that avalanche? 50 million homes, 8 million homes empty in Japan. Empty.
Yeah. All right. So basically, there'll be an attempt. There are political limits, but the force of the crash will be so significant that they just won't be able to control it. And then we'll have the
may not be able to control it. And I think there will be voices that say, "Wait a minute, we did this before. We're not, you know, we don't think this." I think it'll be fought. Now, I don't know exactly how that plays out. There's no way I can tell you that.
Sure.
I'm just saying this crash will be worse. Every stock, we've gone now two major stock crashes, the tech wreck and then the 2008 GFC in the UN. Each stock crash has gone to higher highs and taken us to lower lows. This one's gone to way higher highs. My projection is 5,500 on the Dow minimum.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of wealth disappears. How do you replace that? How do you print enough money to replace the entire stock market? What, you know, 30 you know,
well, Japan's been doing it for 20 years.
Huh?
Japan's been doing it for 20 years, quantitative easing.
One country can do that. One country can have you ever seen the whole world have hyperinflation? It's never happened.
Well, it's never happened, but the question is, and particularly you look at Ray Dalio, I mean, he's put out a book, he gave a 22-minute interview on CNBC, and he's basically saying that he said publicly, we need a third tool to contain this. We've got zero interest rates, we've got quantitative easing. The next time around, we need a third tool. He was asked, what is that tool? We don't know. So I guess the question is, could central banks...
I tell you what the proposal is. It is guaranteed income. A guy in the United States, he's an entrepreneur. He says he wants to run for president. He wants to give every adult $1,000 a month. That's trillions and trillions of dollars a year. He's going to fund it with a 10% VAT tax, which would not even begin to cover it. The assumption's the same everybody always has. If we do all this stimulus, the economy will grow so fast and then the tax revenues will go up. That never works long term.
Right. Okay.
It's a great theory, but it doesn't tend to work.
So there's all these people out there saying there'll be an intervention and we can contain it and Ray Dalio all of this, but your thesis is that those attempts will fail and therefore
if they succeed, I still think the stock market... Okay, remember what I told you? This is almost a guarantee. First whack's going to be 40%, 30 to 50%.
Okay.
The first whack in 29 was 49%. The Dow went down 49% in 2 months and 3 days. 49%. Bam! Disappeared. Never got that money back.
Sure. Now, previously you've said about the timing. Am I correct in saying you were thinking that it was going to be late this year to 2020? Is that still your time frame?
I have two scenarios. In the short term, I always have two scenarios. Long term, I have one scenario. My scenario back for decades was the United States is going to be at a peak economy in 2007, and it's going to be headwinds after that. And it has been headwinds. If it weren't for all this money printing, we would have been in a depression. So in the short term, since there's politics and so many things that can happen, my first scenario is we've already seen the top. If we've already seen the top, what am I looking for? That 42% in the first 3 months.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, that means this first whack here, markets were down 10, 12%. They've bounced, recovered about half of that. Now they're weakening again. If that's true, we ought to see another whack probably in the next week or two. And that could be 15, 20%, not just 10%. Wham! And then one more down the line. We should be down 40% by the end of the year. If we've peaked, if we haven't peaked, and I'll know this in a couple months, probably in a month, if we haven't peaked, then it's another correction and we get one more leg up into 2019 and then that would be the final peak. So I've got two scenarios. Either we've peaked or we get a correction here, 10, 15, 20%. We get one more run into next year and then we peak. My biggest cycle hits in late 2019, and it would be a 90-year anniversary to the 1929 to 32 crash.
Right.
That's okay. As long as I see markets holding up.
So it's either going to be the beginning of next year or about 12 months from now.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
And so if it doesn't happen by then, I tell people in the States, just look me up. I'll be a limo driver in the Gold Coast here in Australia. Because I'll just give up.
Sure. So given that you've got a very short-term scenario, but then then this second scenario, people got about a year to prepare. What is the best way for people to get on top of this particular event, and how can they survive but prosper on the other side?
First thing is I tell people, sell real estate now. Whether it peaks now or a year from now, real estate doesn't go up as fast and crazy as stocks in the last stages. And real estate gets really illiquid. The problem with real estate, once it goes against you, it just freezes up.
Yep.
And stocks, I can sell any minute of the day. Boom, boom, boom. I may be down 20% and say I wish I'd have gotten out before, but I can at least sell down 20% before it hits that 40% and then the 80% ultimately. Stocks, we're telling people, at this period here, we've been telling our subscribers, hedge. Since stocks have gone up, very little downside, only buyer, Federal Bank, everybody thinks Federal Reserve or whoever, central banks will jump in and stop any stock correction, any hint at a recession. So options are cheap. You can hedge. The ASX 200, since it's not as volatile and not as overvalued as the U.S. stock markets, you could hedge an Australian large cap stock price for 2% just out a couple months with options in case that 40% hits suddenly. So you just hedge. You just take 2% and then there's three things that can happen. It can keep going up, you lose your 2%, but that's all you lose is your hedge premium. Or we could just have a minor correction. Well, then you're going to be ahead in your option. You'll make some money. Or things go down 40% and you've hedged yourself and you don't lose that 40% and you're really happy. So you hedge because if we do get this one more run up next year, maybe the Dow goes to 28 to 30,000. That's kind of my target. Okay, now you've sold your stocks and now you had to pay capital gains taxes and stuff. And then you got to go rebuy them and feel like an idiot. So we should hedge this one. If the markets go up, continue to go up after a correction now, and I think there's still more correction coming in this one we have now. If they're up into, let's say, September of next year, that's when I'd say get the hell out of Dodge. Sure. Sell your stocks. But real estate, I say don't play with real estate because real estate is much harder to sell when you finally realize it's over.
Sure. And just on the cash question, because in depressions you have bank failures, is your position to hold cash physically or in the banking system? Or
okay. I don't want to bury it in my backyard, okay? I don't want to have it, first of all, no, minimum amount in checking and savings account, because banks lend against that.
Yep.
10 to 1 is much. And if they lose money lending against overvalued real estate, they don't have your money. That's what causes a run on the banks. Second of all, though, I want to have it in a brokerage account because you can't lend against a brokerage account. But just because companies are still do weird stuff, I have my money in a firm called Ameritrade in the United States. It's just a transaction firm. They don't lend money against real estate. Everbank was an internet firm. I thought, oh God, they're great. Then I found out they lend money against real estate. Nope. If they lose money in real estate, their company gets in trouble, their assets may freeze up. Maybe they didn't lend against you, or maybe you can get it back, but you might have to wait 6 months, or maybe they did something fraudulent and took your money. I mean, so I want it in a brokerage account in my name with a brokerage company that only does transactions, that does not speculate like Goldman Sachs, does not have derivatives, and doesn't lend money against real estate. So that way, they don't get a transaction firm. In fact, there's only going to be more transactions in a downturn. People sell faster than they buy.
Sure. So it's been a good discussion. So just to wrap it up, we're looking at a depression. You know, could be
a global depression.
A global depression within.
So it affects everybody. Even if Australia had zero problems, you're still going to feel it. But this time, you do have the second highest overvalued real estate in the world, second only to China, and your banks are heavily exposed, and households have 67% of their net worth in real estate, way higher than anybody except China.
Sure. So basically, the Australians watching this is they either have got a few months to prepare or 12 months to prepare. So
the first thing you do is you get serious about your real estate. If you're going to stay in some place forever, maybe. I sold my primary house in Florida, and it went down 50% after I sold it, okay? Sold my primary house. Most people won't do that, but people have vacation homes, or people are speculating, or they own an apartment building, something like that. Get serious about real estate now, because real estate, you gotta act first.
Sure, beautiful. Okay, so as we sum up the conversation, is there any sort of final thoughts that you wanna pass on to the viewers?
Well, people always, right now, economists, you know, the mainstream economists, they all do the same thing. They know there's problems. They know there's a lot of debt. They know real estate may be starting to crack. But they can never kind of tell you the truth. They just can't. Because if they say something, then everybody panics. And so you have to listen to people who are objective, who don't have a stake in a major brokerage firm or in the government or something like that. That's who you have to listen to at times like this. And what everybody in the mainstream is saying, oh no, it's different this time, and oh yes, there's this, but it's not a bubble. If I hear it, but it's not a bubble one time, this is the greatest bubble in all of modern history, and the center of this greatest bubble is China. And China is in your backyard, and China is your biggest trading partner. They're not. China could disappear, and the U.S. would hardly feel it. I'm serious. We wouldn't feel it. You're going to feel it. 20% of exports to China. And the lead buying in the high end, and this is a high-end bubble, and it's going to start in the high end and work down. It's not going to be subprime up. Chinese are the marginal buyers who are driving up real estate, especially in places like Sydney and Melbourne, high-end real estate. when their wealth implodes, just like the Japanese did in the late 80s, early 90s, they were buying real estate around the world. They suddenly stopped, and real estate went down. So you're going to feel China. China, your real estate bubble, and the China bubble bursting are going to be the two things you feel from the world. Everybody, the world's going to bring everybody down, but those two things are going to particularly impact Australia. You do not have a demographic problem. You do not have a government debt problem, as most developed countries do, but you have these two problems.
Thank you very much, Harry.
So there you have it. A very interesting perspective from Harry about the way that the economy may play out here locally and also internationally. Buckle your seatbelts down. It could be a bumpy ride. If you found this useful, please like the post, add a comment or a question, we read them all, and do share this particular edition. And do check back next time for our latest show. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you next time.